Hi, this is Bob Cooper of Illy. First of all, I would like to say thanks so much for your trust in us. All of us at Illy realize that the principal purpose of business is to create a customer, not an income. So what we want to do is work really hard at meeting your expectations. And I have to tell you, I have every reason to believe that we're going to do just that with this particular program. Now, I know that you're anxious to get started. I'm certain of that. So what I'll do is I'll be brief. Regardless as to where you are worldwide, and regardless as to whether you have an independent repair shop, a new car dealership, or an aftermarket franchise, one thing is for certain. This course is going to help you turn more of those tough first-time callers into customers. What you're about to hear was recorded live at a seminar that I presented in Irvine, California, and you have my promise. This course is absolutely perfect for any service advisor, regardless as to their age or their experience. And then good gets even better. It does, because you're going to find that this is also a perfect training tool for any of your technicians or support staff that answer your telephone. Now, in addition to the four audio files that you received in your download, you'll also find that we included a copy of the actual course workbook in a PDF format. By providing it to you in this kind of a format, you have a couple of different options. You can either open it up and read it right on your computer screen, or if you'd like, you can print off a copy, and then just like all of the other students that were with us in Irvine, you can take as many notes as you'd like. To open a workbook, well, that's easy too. All that you'll need is Adobe Reader, a free download that you could get at the Adobe website. All right, I guess it's time for us to get started. If you're ready, so am I. Let's take you and your telephone skills right to the top. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another industry acclaimed product from Elite. Welcome to turn your telephone into a gold mine.
They're coming. You know that they are. All that you need to do is look around, and you're going to realize that they're coming. All that you need to do is pay close attention to your industry. All that you need to do is read any business section of any business magazine or any newspaper, and you're going to see that the giants are coming. I know that you know that the big three is no longer the big three, they're now the big two. I know that you know that. I know that when you look at other industries, it's not just your industries where giants are coming, it's all industries. You can talk about high tech, you can talk about the bio industry, you can talk about any industry on the face of this earth. The finance industry, the banking industry, you pick it, and I'll guarantee you the giants are coming. It's a whole new millennia. We're beyond the year 2000, folks. Believe me, we are. You're seeing something that your children's children will never believe that you saw. That's what you're seeing right now. You're seeing this whole universe, this whole business world change overnight. I hope that you have your eyes wide open. I hope that you realize this transformation that's going on, because it's going to change the entire landscape of your industry. 5 years from now, your industry is going to be a completely different industry than it is today. That promise I will make you. And if there's one thing that I know about business, every one of these companies, not some of them, every single one of them have one intent. They're looking to gain customers. There's a great man, not a good man. Marvelous man. Probably the most prolific business mentor, business writer, business educator that has ever walked this earth. I can tell you his name is Peter Drucker. I can tell you, those of you that live in Southern California, you're blessed, because you live in the same state now that Peter Drucker lives in. As a matter of fact, he teaches not far from here, Claremont Graduate School. And this man, if you read any of his books, you'll really have a good understanding of business. When Peter Drucker talks, Fortune 500 companies listen. They pay huge amounts of money to just listen to this man talk. And if there's one thing that I remember reading in one of his books that I'm going to carry with me to the day that I die, it's one little paragraph, or one little sentence, I should say. And I could quote him. This is what Drucker says. The principal purpose of business is to create a customer. Now, I want to be really clear with all of you. Drucker didn't say to create an income. He said to create a customer. You see, what Drucker realizes is that without a customer, there's no potential for income. I know that you'll all agree with that. You see, the customer is the nucleus of every business. The customer is the center of your entire universe when you're in business. Without a customer, you have nothing. You want to tell me that you have a great location? You have nothing. You want to tell me you have great technicians? You have nothing. You want to tell me you have a great marketing plan? You have nothing without your customer. You can't argue that logic, folks. You really can't. So without any question in my mind, the principal purpose of business really is to create a customer. Then if you manage your business the way you should manage your business, if you watch the numbers and have the right people working with you, you know what? Then you have a potential for income. Now with that said, I can tell you this. When your telephone rings, your equipment becomes absolutely meaningless. When that telephone rings, the quality, the caliber of your employees, your technicians, become non-existent. When that telephone rings, your location means nothing. Because you now have 1 minute, mind you, 60 seconds, to convince the caller on the other end of the line that out of dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens, if not hundreds of auto service centers that he or she could have called, that they called the right one by calling you. Now imagine that. So I guess what I'm suggesting to you, ladies and gentlemen, I hope that you understand that when that telephone rings, your world has to stop. No matter what you're doing, no matter what you're thinking, it all has to go on pause. Because the person that's at the center of your business universe is on the other end of that phone line. And you have one opportunity, not two, to convince them to choose you. Ladies and gentlemen, the purpose of this course today is really pretty simple. It's to help you take those first-time callers and turn them into customers for life. I hope you enjoy this course today. If you folks would be so kind as to turn to the bottom of, if you look at the bottom of the pages in the workbook, you'll see page numbers, and if you would be so kind as to turn to page one, toward the top of the page, it'll say Profile of Success. Hey, look, it says number one on page one, all successful people start every day with the right attitude. Do you believe that?
Yes.
I disagree with it. Look, there's some things in that workbook that just aren't going to make sense. Your attitude as a sales professional is not going to have any bearing on your success as a sales professional. Excuse me, what did you say? Why is that, Tom? You think attitude is important? How many of you agree with Tom? Somebody needs to convince me then that I'm in a position where I need to change my mind, I guess. Because I think that it's not important. Why are you suggesting that it is? Yes, ma'am.
If I don't greet you with a smile and eye contact and positive body language, then you're not even going to want to deal with me. I mean, if I come and I bring all my problems from home with all this baggage and I don't leave it at the door when I start work, I've already got a problem.
So you're telling me that my attitude is going to influence my ability to be a successful salesperson? Do you all agree with her?
Yes.
So you're telling me the more positive my attitude is, the more I believe that I'm going to reach certain performance goals, help a lot of people. That's going to influence the outcome?
Yes.
Do you really believe that?
I really do.
You're kidding. You do.
Just to walk through this door today, I had to have a positive attitude because it's definitely male-dominated. And when I want
We're still listening. We're going to learn a lot in this course, so go ahead.
I'm sorry, where are we going?
You were suggesting that when you came through those doors, you needed to have a positive attitude.
Right.
Because there were going to be some obstacles maybe that were going to be in front of you, and you just wanted to be able to deal with those.
Right.
Do y'all agree with her?
Yes.
Look, you can't be successful in sales without having the right attitude, and it has to be a positive attitude. Thank you so much for your comment. Without a question, you have to have a positive attitude. One of the things that Keith mentioned earlier, and this is one of the things that we believe differentiates our materials from other materials. I despise going to any kind of courses where an instructor or anyone will say, do this, shut up, sit down, listen to me, it works, don't ask questions, move on to the next point. We believe that's not how you learn. The way you learn is the same way that you help children become better at what they do, is by giving them what we call reasoning. So you're going to find that 10% of the stuff that we cover here in this entire course is stuff. 90% of it is going to be reasoning. Let me tell you why your attitude is so important. There was a study done at one of the universities, and frankly, I don't even remember which one it was, but what they had done is they went to a group of people that had chronic ulcers, and they said this. We know that you have chronic ulcers. We know that you've been suffering for a long time and just have a lot of pain and anguish, and I have some great news, not good news. I have a drug here, and believe me, this is a wonder drug. We've had nothing but remarkable success with this drug. Now, what we would like each of you to do is take these pills, and we would like you to take them for the next 90 days, and we believe that you're going to be thrilled with the results. They went to a second study group, a double-blind group, by the way, and they said, we have this drug here. We know that you've been suffering from chronic ulcers for quite a while, and this is a wonder drug. And the reason that we call it a wonder drug is I wonder why I'm even wasting my time or your time giving it to you. Frankly, we don't have a lot of faith in it, but there have been some clinical reports that said that it's marginally successful. So I'd like you to take this for the next 90 days. Well, lo and behold, after the 90 days had concluded, now get a load of these numbers, would you please? After the study was done, 75% of the people in this group said that their ulcers were cured. These people over here, 20% of them, the people that had, and I'm going to choose my terms, marginal belief in a product, 20% of them said that their ulcers were cured. The people over here that had a lot of confidence and a lot of belief in a product, 75% of them said that their ulcers were cured. Now, I know that you already know the rest of the story. Neither one of them received a drug at all. It was a placebo. So what this clearly dictated to us was the mind has the ability to influence the body. There's no argument to that point. The body has the ability to influence the mind as well. If you don't have the right attitude in sales, you have to step aside. Because if you don't step aside, you'll get eaten alive. You have to wake up in the morning and you have to say, I'm going to change the world. You really have to have that attitude. You have to wake up in the morning and you have to go to work and say, you know, I'm not here to charge people money to fix their cars. I'm here to help people. That's what you have to tell yourself. You have to wake up in the morning and you have to say when you go to work, you know, dollars are the least important thing. The most important thing is to help people and let them know that I'm here to help them. Now, I'm not saying you don't have to manage the dollars and charge the right prices. Of course you do. But the attitude that you have in your heart is going to show right through to your customer. And if they have any kind of sense or belief system that tells them that what you're looking at is their Visa card, they're going to walk out the door and they'll never come back again. You understand that, don't you? On the other hand, if they know that you really in the bottom of your heart care about them, and this is what we call attitude now, that's going to show through too, isn't it? Everyone in this room has purchased something from somebody that was looking at their Visa card. Is that true? And you never buy from them again, right? I don't care how good the product was or how good the service was, you'll never buy from them again. Because you have a belief now that tells you that all that they were interested in was your money, not you. And I know that everybody in this room has dealt with sales professionals where they genuinely cared about you. So certainly it's attitudinal. If you want to have a great, successful career in sales, then rule number one is you have to understand the importance of attitude. We have a deal on that? Any questions on that? Look at the second one. Tom, what does number two right here? What does it say? You're like me. You have to put your glasses on.
Number two, all successful people start every day with clearly defined goals.
You think goals are important?
Well, as long as you just, you know, have the right focus every day, you just get up and say, well, you know, I'll just go answer the phone, make sure I get all the cars through the business. That's the important thing, that you understand what you're doing. And
you did a great job of not answering the question. Would you like me to ask it again? Do you believe in what Tom just said?
Well, you know,
I'm going to ask you the third time. The question is a simple question. Do you believe in what Tom just said?
Well, he said clearly defined goals. That would mean I'd have to go in there every day and have a specific target that I'm shooting for. And, you know, I've never done that, but I guess that would make sense. Keeping better focus, that's for sure.
So do you believe that all successful salespeople start off the day with clearly defined goals?
Well, I can tell you what I found.
Go ahead.
The answer to that question.
I'm all ears.
Absolutely, yes.
Almost all of the time?
Every time. Whenever I see a shop.
Almost every
whenever
time.
I see a shop that is successful, the service writers have clearly defined daily goals. The shops that are struggling along, trying to get to these levels, they don't. And that's the difference. Every time.
Ring, ring. Is this Joe Average's shop?
Yes.
How you doing today in sales, Joe Average?
Well, you know, we're doing pretty good. It's pretty busy. Got a lot of cars in here. You know, the technicians are busy. We got a couple lined up out there in the parking lot. You know, things are busy.
Hey, Joe Average, let me ask you the question again. How you doing in sales today, Joe Average?
Well, you know, we've done a lot so far. You know, we've got a lot of, we had like 12 customers come in today. We got 4 more in the parking lot.
Hey, Joe Average, you want me to ask you the same question a third time? How you doing in sales today?
Well, I guess I really don't know.
He's not going to make it. God bless him. The Giants are going to put him out of business. That one you could take to the bank. Let's do another one. Can we do it again?
Mm-hmm.
Ring, ring, Joe Superstar. Hello, is Joe Superstar available?
This is Joe Superstar.
Joe, how you? Bob Cooper calling. How you doing in sales today?
Well, Bob, I got $495 still to go. I've accomplished $1,295, and I've got $495 still to go.
What do you mean by that number? What does that mean?
Well, that means in order for me to accomplish my goals today, I've got to sell $495 more dollars, and I got to find 3 cars.
Sounds to me like he's focused. What do you think? Now, I know I don't want any people out here thinking, wait a minute, Cooper, you just said that you need to put your focus on the customers, not the dollars. You know what you need to do? Yeah, you need to put the focus on the customers. You need to help people. But you need to monitor and measure your performance. And the way you do that in any kind of sales capacity, I don't care who you are or what company you are, is by monitoring and measuring your sales. That's called life, folks. It really is. So from an ethic point of view, he still needs to sell $435 and whatever the change is. From an ethic point of view. Now what that's going to do is that's going to compel him to do things that he ordinarily wouldn't do. From an ethic point of view. That's going to make him do the things that he normally wouldn't do. From an ethic point of view. Keith, help me out here for a moment, all right?
Yes.
How are you doing on car counts today, Keith?
Well, I got to get 3 more cars in here, Bob.
Okay, so now he's short 3 cars in order to reach his daily car count goal. So what could he do now, Keith, from an ethic point of view, to get that extra car in at 3 o'clock in the afternoon?
Well, I could do a couple of things. I know I talked to 3 customers today, and we set up appointments for a week from today because we were busy. I can call them back and maybe tell them we've got some opening and some time now. If they'd like to bring their car down, I can save them some time and get this problem started on right away for them.
So what you're telling me is you could call Futures? Are you telling me I could call, like, Mike, and I say, Mike, this is Bob from Elliott Auto Repair. Do you have a moment? Yeah, what's going on? Well, I know we had you scheduled in for an oil service for Thursday, but you know we had a couple openings pop up today, and I thought it might be a little bit more convenient for you to bring it in today. Would you like to go ahead and do that? Is that what you're telling me I could do?
Absolutely.
You bet you could do that. And what it'll do is keep you focused on reaching your car count goals. You can't have sales goals without car count goals. You can't have sales goals without car count goals. You just can't do it. Without cars, you'll never have sales. I hope that makes sense to you. So one of the things that we do clearly believe in is all successful salespeople start off with the right attitude. There's no argument to that. And they're all very focused people. They all know clearly what they're going to accomplish. If you take a look at the same page, page 1, and if you take a look at number 3, it says all successful people have a plan for reaching their goals. What do you think? That's a yes or no. Multiple choice. Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes? No, it's not true. You don't have to have a plan to be successful. You really don't. You know, there's too much emphasis, I believe. Do you agree, Keith? Put on procedures and policies and plans. What do you think?
Yeah, that gets everything, you know, we forget about the purpose as a customer. We got involved in these procedures and stuff. You can't do that.
See? Listen to Keith. He knows. There's a lot of great companies out there that don't follow procedures, and I can name them off for you if you'd like. One would be Nordstrom's doesn't follow procedures. Starbucks doesn't follow procedures. McDonald's, they don't follow procedures in what they do. And those are all successful companies. Excuse me?
You're wrong.
Can you elaborate on it, Jim?
I think that McDonald's follows a procedure every time. They've made studies knowing where to place a pickle, so when you bite on a McDonald's hamburger, that pickle doesn't fall on your lap. They know exactly how much time it's supposed to lay on the griddle and when to flip it. They know when to pull the French fries out. They have those procedures set in place.
Bob, do you agree with him?
Yes.
Tom, do you agree with him?
Definitely.
Do most of you agree with him? Do all of you agree with him? So there's no dissenters in this group then. All right. So then I'm going to challenge you on that. I think it's a waste of time to do that. And I'm going to tell you why. I am now a McDonald's franchisee in Irvine, California. Here we are, Keith. And you know what I'm going to do? I need to hire some people to cook hamburgers. Tom, I'd like to hire you. Thanks for joining my team. Bob, Dorothy, thanks for joining my team. I'm going to tell the rest of these folks, if it's okay with you, since you now work at my McDonald's, I'm going to talk to the rest of these people. You know what I know about these people that I hired? They make great hamburgers. You want to bet? These guys and gals up here in the front row probably have more experience than all the 17-year-olds working in all the McDonald's worldwide. I bet you they've had great cookouts in the past, haven't you? Bet you've had a lot of family. I bet you make one heck of a great hamburger. Now, since all of these people are so talented and I know that they can create great hamburgers, why in the world would I want to follow procedure? They all have the skills and the talents. Why?
Because he wants to make money.
Well, yeah, I do. I do want to make a good income. But why do I need to follow procedure? All of these people are skilled at what they do.
Because we all have our own way.
What's a consistent product? Yeah, consistent.
Why do I need to have consistency? Customers like it. They get the same thing every time. Dave, do you have a comment?
They're good at making hamburgers for one person. You want to make hamburgers for a whole pile of people.
I have to make a note of that. That's a good comment, huh? So what you're telling me is consistency and in volume things change. Is that what you're telling me? Good comment. Yes, sir.
The hamburger I buy in Minnesota better taste like the hamburger I buy in California.
You think that's important to customers? All right. So then, I need some help then. If I have a fast food restaurant, and if I follow your logic, and if I say, wait a minute, consistency will help me assure that I'm getting the result that I'm looking for, and that will allow me to do it in quantity, if I'm understanding you all correctly, that ultimately will lead, according to Dorothy, and tell me if I'm off base with this, Dorothy, to profitability.
Absolutely.
Do you all agree with her and the rest of these people? So then I guess what you're telling me then is McDonald's follows a procedure and it allows them to become successful, right? And is it safe to say that great lawyers follow procedures? That's a yes or no too. You think they do? Do you think great, really gifted lawyers follow procedures? What do you think? Yes, they do. How about doctors? Do you think that the really, unless they're an HMO, right? Do you think that the really great physicians follow procedures? Yes? How about gifted technicians? Do you think that the really great technicians follow procedures? Do you think great salespeople follow procedures? Why would a great salesperson follow a procedure?
Because it works.
Because it works. One of the things that we can't deliver to you, and I hope no one ever attempts to deliver to you, is a silver bullet. There is no such thing. You'll never find a telephone procedure or a sales procedure that will work for everybody. You know that as well as I do, don't you? And you know what? I hope the good Lord never creates one. Because lo and behold, there's a lot of people out there that you probably don't want coming into your service center. Do you agree with me on that? So what we're suggesting is that when you have a procedure, you will never have a sales procedure or a telephone procedure that will work with every caller. There is no such thing. But we also know this, that you can develop sales procedures and telephone procedures that will work with the majority of the people that you would love to have as customers. So let's do this. On the same page, let's take a look at the key points that you're going to find in every great sales procedure. The same page that you're on, page one. This is a fill in the blanks. Keith, you'll be able to help me out with some of these?
Yes.
What's the first step in the sales cycle, Keith?
Establish rapport.
Establish rapport. What in the world does that mean?
Rapport is that word that builds that trust between you and the customer. And before you can go anywhere with that customer needs to feel comfortable with you. And the way you do that is you establish rapport. So before you can go anywhere with the sales, the first step is to establish that rapport, that comfortable trust that you're the right person. Without that, everything else falls apart. So that's the foundation. You have to establish rapport.
So just looking at telephones now, are you actually telling me that when Bob calls in on the telephone, the first thing that I need to do is build, you called it rapport.
That's correct.
Like a connecting with him? Is that what you're telling me?
Absolutely.
In most cases?
In every case.
Almost all cases.
No, in every case.
It's the first step.
It's the first step.
Sometimes I could get around it.
No, you can't.
Sometimes.
No, you can't.
By luck.
Nope.
By accident.
Nope.
You're telling me that when Bob calls, I have to do that before I can do anything else?
Yes.
Huh. Is this all going to be explained to me in this course?
It's all going to be explained in the course as it unfolds.
Okay, so that's step number one.
Step one.
And what's step number two?
Step number two is fact find.
Fact find.
Fact find.
Fact find. And that means like ask questions?
Ask questions.
Now I know what you're talking about. Now I'm getting the picture. If you're going to ask questions of a caller, then what you're trying to do is draw information out of them. And the only way that you could draw information out of anybody is by first having them feel comfortable with you. So in order to communicate with a customer, they have to feel comfortable with me. Is that what you're telling me?
Absolutely.
Now I see why you have to establish rapport, because you can't fact find without first building rapport.
Correct.
Is it important that I fact find?
That's critically important that you fact find.
Why do I have to ask them questions? I'm the professional.
Because you need to go to step three.
There's more steps?
Absolutely. And you can't go to step three without doing step two.
Oh, that's asking for the business.
No, that's going to come later, Bob. Step three is you need to identify the need. What does the customer need?
Identify the need.
Yes. And you're not going to identify the need unless you fact find and ask questions. And the customer's not going to answer your questions unless you establish rapport.
God bless you. So it's like a doctor then.
Absolutely.
I see. Now the doctor, you go into the doctor's office, again with the exception of the HMOs, you go to the doctor's office, and the doctor allows you to feel comfortable, and then they start asking you questions. And the reason the doctor has to ask you questions is they have to find out where you hurt.
That's correct.
What's bothering you, what your concerns are, how long it's been bothering you. Have you had any other symptoms? I see. So they ask the question so they could identify the need. And it, can I guess? All right. So after the doctor identifies the need, then I guess what he does is he tells you what needs to be done.
That's
correct. Can I see if I'm right?
You can see if you're right.
All right. Hey, not bad, Cooper.
Good
I got
job.
One right. So they have to identify the solutions.
Yes.
Like the medicines.
That's correct.
So the doctor builds rapport, asks questions, identifies the problem that the patient has.
Uh-huh.
And then at that point, they tell the patient, is that what it means?
That's correct.
You know, these are the different things that can help you with the problems that you have.
That's correct.
I got a question for you.
Yes.
Identify the solutions.
Uh-huh.
There's an S on the end. Is it supposed to be there?
Absolutely.
Most of the time?
All of the time.
Almost all of the time?
No, every time.
How many of you, when you're making a purchasing decision, it doesn't matter if it's automobiles, if it's a home, how many of you, when you're making a purchase decision, I need to see a show of hands here, like to have a choice? Okay, thank you. Then keep an open mind. From this day forward, understand that your customers are no different than you. From this day forward, understand your customers are no different than you. If you don't offer your customers choice when you're recommending service to them, you're killing yourself as a salesperson. So in our sales cycle, one of the things that we do differently than a lot of people that have sales courses is they'll say, identify the solution. We go, that's not the way you treat people. The way you treat people is the way you would want to be treated. You give them choices. It empowers people. So then after I identify the solutions for Bob, the medicine that he needs, now it's the time to ask him for the business, right?
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes?
No.
But I already know what he needs.
How do you know that he agrees with you?
Well, he came to me because I'm the doctor.
Yeah, but he might not agree with your solutions.
So before I ask for the business, there's something else that I need to do?
Before you ask for the business, you better make sure he agrees with you, or you're going to get an answer you don't want to hear.
Step number five, build interest and value. Step number five, build interest and value. Step number five, build interest and value. Miss that step, you go out of business as a salesperson. Those of you in the back of the room, we have a large group of people here today. Your eyesight may be as bad as mine, so what I'd like to do is mention to you that this is a $5 bill that I have. Tom? I have a deal for you.
You do, Bob.
Uh-huh. This $5 bill here?
Yes, Bob.
Do you have a $20 bill with you?
Yes, I do.
If you'd be so kind as to give me your $20, I'd be more than happy to pass this on to you.
But I'm giving you 15 more back.
Is there something wrong with that?
Last time I checked, yes, Bob.
Okay.
I know I'm from North Carolina, but we're not.
So let me go over here and try a little bit different approach if I could. Dennis, do you have just a moment?
Sure.
I know that this looks like a $5 bill to you, and probably to just about everybody in this room, that's what it appears to be. Let me take just a moment, if I could, and tell you a little bit more about what this really is. Folks, what I'd like you to do is, rather than paying attention to me, I'd like you to pay attention to the overhead screen and look at step number 5, because this is one of the missing links in sales that people just fail to do. Let me tell you a little bit more about this note that appears to be a $5 bill. Now, obviously, I don't want to misguide you here. When you look at it, it looks like an average $5 US bill. If you look real close at the backside, the serial numbers, they're printed upside down. Now, you're probably thinking, boy, that makes it pretty unique. It does. Let me tell you how unique it is. This bill isn't the only one, by the way, in case if you're wondering, Dennis. There's 4 others that were minted just like this one. The first one of the 5 is in the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C. It's on display there. It's remarkable. People come from all over the world to see it. The second one, frankly, isn't a second one anymore. It was on a ship that was lost at sea. The third one is the Guggenheim Museum. It's on display as well. The fourth one, it's in my bank vault. Lucky guy, I got 2, huh? So let's talk about this one.
Bob, I have 50 bucks for that.
Tom, you're the true negotiator, aren't you, huh? So what changed? From the first presentation to the second presentation, what changed?
Build interest
and value. People aren't going to buy anything from you unless they see value in it. Unless they're interested in what you're offering, and unless they see value, unless they want what you have more than their money, they're not going to buy. Unless they want what you have more than their money, they're not going to buy from you. So please, don't do like a lot of salespeople do and ask for the business before you do step number 5. After I build interest and value, I'm done. Is that right?
No, you're not done.
Why not? I should be. I just build interest and value, and if I have a great product or great service, they're going to purchase from me.
No, that's not true, Bob.
Yeah, it is. If I have a great product or great service.
You had somebody hooked and left me.
You're a dentist, yeah.
Well, you can build interest and value all day long, and the customer agree with you, Bob, but if you don't do the next step, the customer is more than likely not going to say yes.
Excuse me?
Well, you see, you can build interest and value all day long, but if you don't do the next step, which is ask for the business.
Ask for the business is step number 6? Huh.
Then the customer is not going to say yes.
Wait a minute. Excuse me. Are you telling me, going back to Dennis over here for a minute, before Tom the negotiator jumped back in, are you telling me after I build interest and value, I have to ask him to purchase this?
Yes.
How many of you agree with him? Over 80% of the sales that are lost in all sales environments are lost for one reason. Salespeople that never ask for the business. 80%, over 80% of the sales that are lost worldwide in all sales environments are lost for one reason. Salespeople that don't ask for the business. You all have what we call emotional triggers. I'm going to make you a couple promises. Here's one of them. People don't make logical purchasing decisions. I'm going to say that again because that's an important comment that you need to understand in sales. People don't make logical purchasing decisions. They don't. They make emotional decisions. And then what they do is they reinforce them with logic, or they attempt to reinforce them with logic, I should say. That's the way the human species works. Your mind is nothing but a series of emotional triggers that are firing off all of the time. Not some of the times, all of the time. If you don't ask for the business, you're pulling some awful strong emotional triggers with people. When a caller calls your service center, and you tell them that, well, I recommend that you bring it in for a brake inspection, or I recommend that you bring it in for this or that, and you don't ask for the business, you're pulling triggers in their mind. Keith, help me out. If you called Bob's Auto Repair, and if I told you that you needed a brake inspection, but I never asked you to bring the car in, what's one of the triggers that could be pulled in the back of your mind? What's one of the thoughts that could fire off?
Maybe Bob really doesn't believe that that needs to be done. Maybe he's just getting pressure from the owners. Maybe he's just telling me that.
Do you all agree with him? It's true. What's another thought that could jump through your mind?
Gosh, maybe Bob is doesn't like the technicians that he works with and doesn't think they can really do the job that well.
Do you agree to that? Yeah. You bet. What's another thought that's going to go through your mind?
Maybe Bob's having a bad day. Maybe he just doesn't want to even be at his job today.
This is all true, isn't it? So when you don't ask for the business, what you're really doing is this. Believe me, I don't fib to people. What you're really doing when you don't ask for the business is you're telling the customer through your own silence, don't buy from us. There's something that's wrong, don't purchase. There's something that's wrong, don't buy. Because if I really believe that this product or service was good for you, I would ask you to purchase it. Now, if you're still wondering as to whether or not that's really validated, I'm going to take just a moment, if I could, and tell you a brief story that really should drive this point home for you. And I don't remember where I read this, but it was in a legitimate publication. It was in Fortune magazine or Forbes magazine, but it was really in a Wall Street Journal. It was in a legitimate publication. Some fellow walked into a business down on Wall Street in New York City, went up to the 44th floor or whatever it was, walked up to one of the receptionists and said, is Mr. Big Shot in, the chairman of the president of the company? And the receptionist said, well, do you have an appointment to see him? And this person said, no, I don't have an appointment to see him, but I got to see him right now. And she said, is it a medical emergency? He goes, no, but I got this software program, and it's the best software program on the face of this earth. He needs to see it now. And the receptionist says, but you don't have an appointment to see him, do you? No, I don't. Is that his office around there? And the secretary said, well, yeah, that's his office, but he's in a meeting right now. You can't go in there now. And the salesperson said, that's his office. She said, well, yeah, it is. And he started walking around her desk. And he barged right into the office, and the man was in the middle of a conference. This guy slams his briefcase down on the conference table, opens it up, and says, Mr. Big Shot, I'm glad that I had the opportunity of catching you. I hate to interrupt you, but I got this software program that's going to revolutionize your business. And Mr. Big Shot jumps up from his chair, and everybody else is startled in this conference room. And Mr. Big Shot says, you moron, what are you doing barging in here? He says, well, we got this software program that's going to change your whole world. He says, get out of here, you moron. And he hollers to the secretary, says, call security. And you know what they did? Security came into his office and drugged this guy out. Now, here's the rest of the story. 2 weeks later, Mr. Big Shot is in an elevator with one of the security guards that drugged this lunatic out of his office. And he says, hey, whatever happened with that lunatic that you drug out of my office? And the security guard says this. He says, well, you'll never believe what happened. We took him downstairs waiting for the NYPD to show up. We had him in detention down in our office, and our boss, who is chief of security, wound up buying a software program from him. And Mr. Big Dome says, what did you say? He says, well, we had him in detention down there for an hour, and our boss bought whatever it was that he was selling, some kind of a software program. It intrigued Mr. Big Dome. Mr. Big Dome found that man and said, whatever it is that you're selling, I need to talk to you again. And he wound up buying the software program. So the point of the story is this. What that man did was he believed in his product. Do you agree with me? And do you think he asked for the business? So the point is the fact that he was so incredibly anxious to help people purchase it, that just transcends, doesn't it? And it tells people it's a good product. If you don't ask for the business, you can't sell. If you don't ask for the business, you can't sell. When a first-time caller calls on the telephone, if you don't invite them into your service center, if you don't ask them to bring it in, you're not selling. You're really not selling. So ask for the business, and then I'm done. Is that right?
No.
No?
No.
There's more to this?
Absolutely.
Can't be.
Oh, yes, there can be.
Well, I just asked for the business.
Yes, but you have not completed the sale, have you?
No, I guess not, because the next step is pretty darn important, isn't it? I got to close the sale. Now, closing the sale means what?
Getting the customers okay, getting their financial things that they need to take care of the transaction, and making the complete close. And somewhere between that ask for the business and closing the sale, you might not always get that. So you can't just ask for the business, you have to close the sale.
Now, can I look at this just for a moment backwards?
Sure.
I guess this makes a lot of sense to me now, because now I understand that I really can't close a business step number 7 unless I do step number 6. I got to ask for it in order to close it based on what I'm gathering here. Is that right?
Yes.
And it's silly for me to ask for the business unless I build interest and value.
Correct.
Because if I don't build interest and value, they might not buy. Is that right?
That's correct.
And then in order to build interest and value, I first have to identify what it is that I'm building interest and value in. Is that right?
Correct.
Most of the time.
All of the time.
Almost all of the time?
No, every time.
All of the time. And then in order to identify the solutions, I have to first identify what the customer needs. Is that right?
That's correct.
And I can't do that without first fact-finding like a detective. And correct. I can't do that unless the customer is receptive.
Absolutely.
Is correct. That right?
That's correct.
So that's it then. I close the sale. Step number 1 through step number 7. Not bad, huh?
No, I think we're missing one.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm confident that we're missing one. You see, a lot of sell cycles I've seen have these first 7 steps on there, but it seems to me there needs to be one more step. And you know what I think that step would be, Bob?
What's that?
Well, it would seem like after the customer goes ahead and you close the sale, there needs to be a pat on the back that tells the customer, you did a good job, you know, right decision. You made the right decision.
And it's called reselling the service.
That's correct.
Is that right?
Absolutely.
For an event just the other day, there were 8,000 people there. And one of the things that they were talking about was sales. And it was really funny that a couple of times they had mentioned the 7 steps in the sales cycle. And I thought, that's not true. That's not true. If you really care about people, you'll never forget step number 8. If you really care about people, you'll never forget that the sale doesn't end, it doesn't close with the close. Your job isn't done then, your job is just beginning. Do you all agree with us on that? You know, you need to make sure that that customer says, you know, I do feel good with my decision. And what we call that is reselling the service. Doctors have a term for it. Every time they do any kind of a transplant of an organ, they always give someone an anti-rejection drug because they know that the body is naturally going to fend off and attempt to reject the new organ, correct? Well, people are no different. When they now harbor a new belief, when you just purchased something from Elite Auto Repair that you hadn't had in the past and made that decision, that's a new belief that's inside of you. And your body naturally, believe me, is going to repel it. It's foreign to you. So what I need to do is I need to give you an anti-rejection drug too after you purchase, and it's called reselling the service. So what we're going to do is we're going to show you how you can implement every single one of these steps into your toolbox. We're going to show you how you're going to have all of the empowerment that you need to effectively go through that sales cycle with every one of the first-time callers. What do you think? You all ready to do that? Turn to the next page, and we'll spend just a couple minutes on the next page, and then we'll take a break. Step number 1, establishing rapport. Now again, today is just telephones. That's all that we're looking at. And it says the only way you can build rapport over the phone is by having the right attitude and by smiling. You know, I have a fundamental disagreement with that. Number 1, I don't believe that you need to smile when you're on the phone because people can't see you anyways.
No, but they can hear you smile.
Dorothy says, no, but they can hear you smile. Do you agree with her?
Yes.
So what? Whoop-dee-doo! They can hear Bob smile! What does that have to do with sales?
Everything.
Excuse me?
Everything.
What do you mean everything?
Well, what's step 1 in the sales cycle?
Build rapport.
And do you think that one of the ways you might be able to build rapport is by smiling?
How is that going to influence the caller?
Well, it seems to me like people like to deal with happy people, not frumpy face people.
Yeah, they want to talk to you. That's right.
She said that they'll want to talk to you. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
So you're telling me that if somebody calls Elite Auto Repair and if I sound like I'm smiling, I'm pulling an emotional trigger in a customer's mind or in a caller's mind that I'm having a good day. Is that what you're telling me?
That's correct.
How many of you, out of curiosity, when you know someone's having a bad day, out of curiosity, I need a show of hands, how many of you like to step into that person's world? When they're having a bad day? Why is it that you don't want to step into somebody's bad day? Pardon me? Yeah, why? Give me some other reasons. Why is it that you don't want to step into somebody's bad day? Yes, sir? Going to have a direct effect on you. Everyone in this room has luggage. You all have challenges in life. I know that you do. I know. Do you need more challenges? No, you don't. You need less challenges, right? So if Keith calls Elite Auto Repair, one of the things that I'll guarantee you is he already has one challenge. He's looking for somebody to take care of his automobile. You know what he doesn't need? More challenges. So if I'm smiling, I'm pulling some pretty strong emotional triggers in the back of his mind that I'm having a good day. And you know what? If he's really a lucky guy, and I'm sort of poking with this comment, if he's really a lucky guy, that might spill off onto him. Do you realize that? If I'm having really a great day, that could help him. You can't argue that point. On the other hand, if I'm having a really bad day, it ain't going to help you. I can guarantee you that. If anything, it's going to make your life worse. Do you agree? All right, so you have to smile. It builds rapport. It allows the customer to go, you know, that guy's having a good day. I want to step into that day. Jeremy, do you agree to that?
Yes, I do.
Jeremy, do me a favor. Can I borrow you just for a moment?
Sure.
When you answer the phone,
yes.
One out of a million will answer the phone the way Jeremy answers the phone. What is your greeting when you pick up the phone?
It's a great day at McKenna Motors. This is Jeremy. How can I help you?
It's a great day. Is that what you actually say?
Yes.
It's a great day. Do you see what he's doing? He's sending out a strong emotional message to you that he's having a great day. People step into that world, they don't step out. So rule number one in building rapport, not an iffy issue. You have to smile. When you pick up the phone, you have to smile. Now some people say, well, sometimes it's tough to smile. You know what? That's called life. There's a lot of things that are hard to do in life. It's really hard to drive less than 65 miles an hour when you're on a freeway. At least for me it is. I bet you for most of you it is too. But the point is, that's called life, isn't it? Life has rules. If you want to be successful in sales, you have to follow the rules. Rule number one says build rapport. Step number one is build rapport. And the way you build rapport over the phone is by smiling. They can hear it over the phone, correct?
Correct.
Tonality. Yes, sir. We have a comment in the back.
Yeah, I heard a sales lecture one time where a gentleman would chant to himself for about 10 seconds, he would phone call on hold, he would say, I love myself. If he's having a good day or a bad day, he just would go through this routine and chant to himself, and then he would continue the phone conversation.
Sometimes I know when I shouldn't say anything. This is one of those occasions. So let's move on. Great comment. Thanks for sharing that with us. Keith, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Can people see me over the telephone when they call Elite Auto Repair?
Not with their physical eyes, no.
They can't see me?
No.
Is visual input important in sales?
Critically important.
Almost important.
No, critically important.
Excuse me, you're off base. What I tell customers is important, not visual input.
Bob.
Yes?
55% of that sale is based on visual input, at least 55%.
Wait a minute. Say that again. What did you just say?
55% of that sale that you make is going to be based and affected by the visual input that the customer has.
55% of every sale is based on visual input. People believe what they... Do you agree to that? Yeah, they do. So the important point is, since they can't see you over the telephone, they have to make their decision based on one of two things. And look at these two powerhouses. Look at this. 38% is the tonality of the salesperson. Only 7% of the words that you use. That's why Cooper gets frustrated when I see salespeople that don't really understand visual input and tonality with sales. If you think people listen to you, and I need to say this very clearly so there's no misunderstanding, if you think your customers are listening to your words, when you're recommending a service, I will adamantly disagree with you. It's a learned skill to be able to distinguish between the words and the tonality. It really is. And it's a very difficult skill to develop, to be able to listen to someone and carry on both listening patterns at the same time. I'm telling you, if your tonality suggests anything other than a positive, you need to purchase this kind of tonality, I don't care what words you use, they're not going to buy. This is a UCLA study right here in your own backyard, folks. Look at the power of this. Now, you know that they can't see you over the phone. So in that case, it's going to be tonality or words. Look at the runaway difference, 38 to 7%. What I'm clearly suggesting to you is it's not your words that's going to influence people over the telephone. It's your conviction. Do you listen to them? Do you really believe that you can help them? Are you offering them the services? Before we move on or take a break, Jerry Spence. How many of you have heard the name Jerry Spence in the past, out of curiosity? For those of you not familiar with the name, he's the lawyer that there was an athlete in Southern California that was charged with a homicide a few years ago, and I know you all followed it on TV. And this athlete went to Jerry Spence first, and he said, I'd like you to defend me. And Jerry Spence walked away and he said, I'm not going to take your case. He was on a lot of the talking head shows, CNN years ago. You might have seen him there. He's a fellow that has long blonde hair. He's probably in his 60s, wears leather jackets with a frill. And one of the things that Spence says in one of his books, How to Win an Argument Every Time, he says this. Whenever the prosecutor is giving his closing argument to the jury, what Spence says that he'll do is sit back, close his eyes, and pay attention to the tonality of the prosecutor. And as soon as the prosecutor is done with his summation, Spence says he then knows in his heart as to whether or not they're going to free his client. I said nothing about words. Spence says he sits there and he pays attention to the tonality of the summation of the prosecutor. So if the prosecutor really sounds like in his heart that he has this belief, you all know where we're going with this, that the person really should be convicted, the jury's going to buy it. But if it's just words, if it's platitudes, then his client walks. So you bet. People are going to judge you when you pick up that telephone. A P.S., you have 17 seconds to build first impressions with people. 17 seconds, your clock stops. If you can't get them to say, wow, I'm on the phone with the right guy, they're going to tune you out. They're not going to tune you in. You know that as well as I do. And the easiest, fastest way of building rapport over the phone is by smiling, like Jeremy did. Let's get to the bottom of step one, and then we'll take our break, all right? It says by answering the phone promptly. Is that important?
Critically.
10
yes.
rings?
About 10, 12 in that time.
10,
frame.
12 rings.
Uh-huh.
All right. So look, when your phone rings, please pick it up after 10 rings, but before 12 rings. Excuse me? I'm getting confused here. 10 rings, right?
Wrong.
10. 10?
Second, third.
9.
Three.
8?
Three.
9.
Three.
Good 8.
Three.
7?
Two.
Wait a minute. Excuse me. We got a fundamental disagreement here. Look, when people call Elite Auto Repair, what I want them to do is realize that we're busy.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I want them to realize that we're busy.
Yeah.
When that phone rings, I want that baby to start melting on the receiver. I want them to know, man, where are these guys? That way, when I pick it up, they'll know that we're a busy business.
I'll call somebody else. They kill you busy, they don't kill you busy.
They want their problem fixed. They don't care if you're busy.
Never thought about it. We need to make a note of that. Is that true?
That is true.
So you're telling me I need to answer it before 10 rings?
Yeah.
9?
One.
What do you think? Yes or no?
We should call them.
All right. Did you invite her? Great lady. Thanks for the great comment. All right. So look, this is what we're going to ask you to do. Please pick up the phone in the first four rings. Now, what you need to do is, and this is important. You need to make sure that you have a protocol for who answers the phone. The person that is first responsible to pick up the phone in the first 2 to 3 rings is going to be your killer key service writer. Do you agree or disagree with me on that? And then you need to have somebody standing right behind him or her that knows that it's their responsibility to pick up the phone if he can't. And they need to be assigned a certain number of rings too, right? And then there's other people in your service center need to know if he can't get it, if the killer can't get it, and if the backup can't get it, then it's Technician Larry or Technician Mary or whoever needs to pick up the phone. Now, some of you are probably springing out gray hairs going, oh, Bob, I can't have my technician answer the phone. Yes, you can. Oh, Bob, my technician, he hates to answer the phone. You can have him answer the phone. Oh, he won't smile. Yes, he will. Yes, he will. And we're going to help you with all of that before this course is over. The point is that the customer's at the center of your universe. When that phone rings, your world needs to stop. It really does. Do you all agree? Mm-hmm. Right. All right. So your world needs to stop. You need to pick a thing up in the first four rings. Not sometimes. Absolutely all of the time. Keith, it says by speaking slowly, distinctly, and properly introducing ourselves. What do you think?
Absolutely. You have to slow down. And if you know the phone's ringing and you're busy and all kinds of things are going on in your shop, you've got to slow down. You know, and I know there was a gentleman that joked about, I love myself. But you need to slow down and take a couple of breaths before you answer the phone and make sure that you're slow and don't let the customer know that you're rushed. Don't send them the wrong flags. Remember, you're trying to establish rapport. And the way you do that is by making sure when you answer the phone, you're letting that customer know that they have your undivided attention. And that means you have to slow down. And I know that's hard sometimes. I know you have a lot going on, but you've got to slow down, because when you slow down, then you will speak slowly, distinctly, and properly.
Wait a minute. Excuse me. If I speak really fast, they're going to know that I'm busy. Right?
Yes, that's true. Which might also tell them that you don't care about them because you have plenty of other business there. And you have more important things to do than take care of their problem.
This program is continued on the next audio file in this series.